Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory. Been a minute. Playoffs rolling along and plenty going on in the rap world. And we're going to talk about a little of it all here in bits and pieces. We'll try to get some more episodes rolling out as the playoffs continue and this beef continues between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. But we just got the MVP results, Nate. And well-deserved, your guy, Jokic. Yeah. Wins again. Three in the bag for him. And he wins this one convincingly. I heard a lot of people make the Shea case in recent weeks. And I understand the Shea case, given his young team that didn't even make the playoffs last year, rising to the one seed in the incredibly competitive West, doing it by beating out the Nuggets, beating them three times. And him just having a ridiculous scoring season. Good defensive season, as well as initiating a lot of the offense for the Thunder. So I understood his case. I also just don't think there's any knock in second place. And that's what he comes away with here. It's always going to be hard to knock the numbers with Jokic. And I get why people don't want to give Jokic every MVP for the rest of time just because he's putting up these triple-doubles. But when you look at 26, 12, 9... and the defensive strides he's made, it was going to be tough to deny him this year.
Yeah, I mean,
played 79 games.
Yeah, I mean, there are, in my personal top three would probably be somewhere in the range of Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jalen Brunson. I think the same argument you can make for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you can also make for Jalen Brunson when it comes to the fact of making a team that last year didn't seem to be a contender, become a contender. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Brunson, it's two different sides of the same coin, in my opinion. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is leading the youngest team, probably the youngest team, if not like the second or third youngest team in the NBA, and led them to the one seed after, as you said, they didn't make the playoffs. So that within itself is super impressive. On the Jalen Brunson side, you have all these injuries and you have trades going in and out, so like the continuity or the level of continuity you'd expect from a team that is going through all this turmoil in terms of players on the court, they really didn't miss a beat all year. So for that reason, I can also make the Jalen Brunson argument as well. The Luka argument, I mean, I kind of get it, but at this point it's just like
silly, like, numbers for him.
Like he puts up great numbers, but it's just, I don't know. Sometimes it can run the risk of it being a little empty. I don't think it's always empty, but I think sometimes it does show up that way.
They had a good season, though.
They did have a good season. But primarily when you got players like Gafford and then Lively started playing better, that's really when they started to take off. Like I said on the last podcast, like that starting five has been one of the best starting fives in the league. So you can, I see why Doncic is in third place. The Giannis in fourth place, I don't really understand that at all, honestly. I think that's just more because of the name than anything.
Enormous numbers, too. He did statistically have the best season of his career this year.
Oh, okay. So if that's the case, then I guess I kind of see it. I do think that just looking at the list here, Anthony Edwards probably should be, in my opinion, would be my fourth MVP.
Really?
Just because, 1,000%. Just because the Timberwolves are not this good without Anthony Edwards. That's just a fact. Last year we saw them and they kind of looked like a disaster waiting to happen. And this year, even through the first two games of the second round, you're seeing them kind of break some curses that they've had. We'll see if it continues. Obviously there's two more wins that need to be had for them to get out of the second round, but the first two games that they've played against Denver, they've looked dominant. And a lot of that is because the Anthony Edwards is that good, but a lot of it is also because the Nuggets seem to be thinking that they still are playing the Los Angeles Lakers and coming out sluggish and thinking they could make up for it in the second half. But that, we'll get to that later. But I think a good top five, in my opinion, would be Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, and then I'll probably put Luka Doncic number five.
Jokic, slam dunk. I think Shai, slam dunk, is number two. It does get tough from there, and I understand the Brunson case. You had him third, right?
Yeah.
To me, I do put a lot of defense into this, playing two ways, and I've said it many times. He does come out a a lot of times on defense at the end of late close games. But given what they had to overcome injury-wise, given the season they had rising up to number two, I'm willing to give them that. And I don't know if I would give them that over Luka. And, you know, I'm not a numbers guy, but I just think he had to do everything for Dallas with some help and support, of course, from Kyrie. Mm-hmm. But setting up the lobs and the seasons those centers had there for some historic runs of efficiency, really, and that offense through the roof, making some defensive strides, and he had his struggles on that side of the ball. But, of course, while dealing with the volume, he had to carry there. So I'd probably put him three. If you want to give Brunson four, I'd do that. I'm going to give Tatum five, though, and I'm as critical of him as anyone. Mm-hmm. I do think you get something for being the best player on the best team, sacrificing scoring-wise to improve in other areas of his game. I thought this was a phenomenal passing season for him, you know, cutting down turnovers, making everything work on a team that had a lot of moving parts, new guys coming in, guys who needed or got shots in the past, having to sacrifice, but also continuing to find those guys consistently. And they won the East by like 40 games. So that's got to mean something too. I love Edwards. I'm just not going, and this is going to be a conversation we have throughout the playoffs now, is it looks like Minnesota and Boston might be on a collision course here. And I do want to get your thoughts on that, Nate, as we get into the playoff discussion here. Everyone's starting to anoint Edwards. I know this annoyed Taylor over the summer, but he came out and did his thing this year. And, you know, the couple of times I've seen him in person, the defensive intensity stands out. Of course, what he's able to do leading the offense. He turns the ball over a little bit too much, but he's cut that down this year. And the shooting has come along in a big way. But I don't think he's a better player than Tatum yet. And he might be able to outplay Tatum in some games if they end up getting to the finals. And they certainly have two, you know, contrasting styles as teams that I think would be interesting if they match up. But just based on their regular seasons, I got to put Tatum over Edwards. And I actually agree with you, as big of a Giannis guy as I am. The stats were great. The defense is amazing. He's always in that mix of one of the best defenders in the league. But all the nonsense this year, it has to fall back on him to some degree. And I do knock him down for that. And so I will go with Jokic, Shea, Luka, Brunson, Tatum.
Yeah. This isn't a anti-Tatum argument. It's an anti-laziness argument. I just hate the argument of he's the best player on the best team, so we have to give him MVP. I hate it so much.
But he did make the best team work in a lot of ways. Like his on-off numbers, his ability to drive your bench.
My personal definition of MVP is literal. The most valuable player, meaning if you take the player off the team, what happens to the team? How good is the team? Too.
So obviously,
and if you take Jason Tatum, yeah, like if you take Jokic off the team, the Denver Nuggets are not the same team. If you take Jason Tatum off the Celtics, are they as good? No. But are they still really good? Yes. So for that reason, I never understood why Tatum was in the argument in the first place. And again, it's not an anti-Jason Tatum argument. It's just an anti, like, I just think that mode of thinking is so lazy, because it's like every year, if we give it to, like, there was a time that people thought that because LeBron was on the best team or whatever, like, he deserves it every year. Like, no, he doesn't. Like, there are players who are making it do with more with less, making more happen with less. And I think that just in the spirit of MVP, most valuable player, it is the single player who does the most, who exceeds expectations with the least. And not saying that Jokic's team is complete trash. It's not. But if you take Jokic off the team versus if you take Jason Tatum off the team, we're talking about two different teams. If you take Shea Gilgeous-Alexander off OKC, and like, where are they? If you take Jalen Brunson off the Knicks, are they really – can we realistically say they're in the playoffs this year? I don't think we can. And
in the playoffs?
They might be like a 7-8 seed. Yeah. But they're not a two seed. They're definitely not a two seed. So for that reason, I just think that we need to, as a basketball community, we need to, and this goes for everything too, even like championships and stuff like that. We need to examine what these star players were given on their teams and what was expected out of them with these teams. And did they meet expectations? Did they exceed expectations, or did they fail to meet the expectations? And I think that that is a more fair grading system, because the NBA is not about like just star player driven. And I've talked about this too. Like, I hate that we don't talk about GMs. We don't talk about coaching. Like, these are all critical parts.
GM of the year, Brad Stevens.
NBA, yes. And that within itself, like, look at the roster that he created. He deserved that. But what I'm saying is, like, when you look at the Warriors, for example, and you look at how they had, like, Bob Myers for all these years, like, that's a key part in them winning championships. Eric Spoelstra is a key part in Miami being competitive. Greg Popovich was a key part in the Spurs dynasty. So it's way more than just the players on the court. You have to put it together. First of all, you have to bring in players. You have to make sure that they're compatible with one another in terms of on a personal level, but you also have to make sure they're compatible with each other on a playoff, on a basketball level as well. And I think that there are a lot of times where players get the brunt of the criticism when the reality is that they just weren't put in a position to succeed. One player that I think of like routinely about this, who I think is a primary example of this, is when you look at DeMarcus Cousins and how great he was, but he can never make the playoffs because Sacramento was just tripping over themselves every single year. Like, I can't blame DeMarcus Cousins for not making the playoffs because he doesn't have anything around him. So I think that we need to look at it more totality, in a more total landscape aspect, versus, oh, this player is bad because he didn't make the playoffs even though he was playing with Joe Schmo.
It's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I think the guys who have no help whatsoever get breaks there. And that's why I think the guys who don't have help who excel and make the playoffs get the biggest benefit of the doubt here. And Jokic certainly has help, but you look at the on-off here, he's the king of it every year. 100th percentile, 24-point difference net rating when he's on the floor versus when he's off. Similar for Shea, 10-point difference, which is in the 92nd percentile. Brunson was in the 98th percentile, 14-point difference between when he was on and when he was off this year. So
I'm understanding. So you're saying in terms of in the order, it's Jokic, Brunson, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
Well, Giannis was third. 96 percentile, 12-point difference.
Jokic, Brunson, Giannis, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Let's take a look at Luka.
Okay.
Luka was 96 as well, so he was in the tie for third with Giannis. So that would mean fifth out of that group would have been Shea.
Okay. And Brunson.
Tatum. And Brunson is second.
Okay.
And Tatum, I don't think you'll be surprised, Nate. Celtics were 2 points worse with him on the floor this year.
With him on the floor?
Yes, just because their bench.
Get him out of the voting. Get him out of the voting. Come on. You can, most valuable player. Like, again, this is not an anti-Tatum.
But I don't think argument. That's about, Tatum. It's at the team.
Yeah, like the team is just so good. And like we've talked about this before. I believe like maybe like the first or second podcast of the season, we kind of dove into this as well, and we argued Jokic versus Tatum, and just to see it play out. Let's, I mean, honestly, I'm going to toot my horn a little bit just to see it play out the way that I thought it would. It's almost like Bobby should listen to me more, right?
Edwards, 4-point difference. So he was like 73rd percentile.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think they got this right, and I have no qualms here. Brunson, it's been amazing to watch what he did this year. It reminded me a lot of Isaiah that season and how he just carried that team. And he certainly had help too. You know, Brunson's got OG, and Isaiah had Horford that year. And, you know, they got good teams around them, but those guys just will them to victory a lot of the time.
But Brunson didn't have OG the whole season. He was starting off with Emmanuel. Yeah. Like Emmanuel Quickly and Barrett. RJ Barrett and stuff like that. So like just being able to adjust to new teammates in the middle of a season, that's incredibly hard. I think that Jalen Brunson deserved a lot more credit. And he's getting a lot of credit right now. We're definitely seeing it, especially with his performance in the first round. But I think for his regular season performance, he deserved a lot more credit than he got.
And they did it the hard way into that first round. I said, you probably should try to avoid the Sixers. And it ended up being really hard But they got it done in six games, so credit to them. I'm really looking forward to a potential Knicks-Celtics East Finals here.
Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
But we'll start in the West real quick. Want to shout out our partner Prize Picks. Go check them out. Our official daily fantasy sports partner. You just pick more or less. It's that easy. Two guys. You got your team for the night. Points, rebounds, assists. If you're talking basketball playoffs here. But you also got hockey, baseball is going on as well. You can cross sports a little bit here too. So use our code CLNS for a promo. 100% deposit match up to $100 over at prizepicks.com/CLNS. Support Dome Theory, Garn Report, CLNS, all the way down the line. Whole network here, our great partner, our official daily fantasy sports partners, Prize Picks. So let's start with the series that's shocking everybody, Nate. And I can't believe how bad the Nuggets look right now, especially in game two. Obviously, the biggest thing is Murray's injury, and I said going into the series I'm probably leaning Wolves if Murray's not right, and he's clearly not right here right now with the calf. So shocking, Jokic hasn't looked good either. The Wolves won without Rudy, which I know you'll probably go right to here, but they also won game one with him. Yeah. And they dominated it on the road. There's some staggering numbers for teams that win the first two games on the road. I think there's only five losses ever and like 30-something wins in that situation. So we're sitting here right now, and I'm not ruling Denver out yet, but they're looking pretty rough. And we could be on the verge of seeing the defending champs, a team that I had winning it again this year, like many, going down in round two. And that could have massive implications here. So let me say three things. Number one, I'm excited about this Minnesota team. I like them coming into this year, and they've been even better than I could have imagined here. And they've surprised me too with stuff like Towns' performance here so far. Number two, if Denver goes down, I think I'm jumping on that Celtics bandwagon. I really don't see a team that can.
The Boston Celtics reporter has to jump on the Boston Celtics bandwagon.
Well, I've given Denver the edge over them so far.
All right.
And number three, that Wolves-Celtics finals could be really fun. A lot of talent on both sides and two stars that would go at it in a fun way. So what's your thoughts on the series? Is it over? Where's it going from here? And have the Wolves sold you yet?
Anthony Edwards, when we were talking about round one, I felt like Anthony Edwards was great. But the Timberwolves as a team, specifically playoff Rudy Gobert and playoff Karl Anthony Towns, would hold them back. But what I'm seeing is Anthony Edwards is better than all of that. It doesn't matter what he has on his team. Like he's able to lead the team in a way where he's able to keep Karl Anthony Towns locked in. He's able to keep Rudy Gobert locked in as well. Rudy Gobert, I will admit, looks better as a perimeter defender than we've seen in previous years. Still not the greatest, but decent.
Towns still fouling four times a game, though. He's got to rein that in.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's not six, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, that's a huge improvement within itself. It's weird to say, but it is a huge improvement. You have Jaden McDaniels. The one thing that I think that does the Wolves a lot of good is their long, lengthy wings. You can guard a lot of players. You could guard everybody in the league if you have long, lengthy wings. You might not be able to stop them, but you have a better chance of containing them. And
that's the key to beating Boston.
That's why Rudy Gobert as a paint defender, really good, tremendous. But I just always hated that he gets all the credit when he's been surrounded by great defensive players. Anthony Edwards is turning it on defensively. Jaden McDaniels, I was surprised that he didn't get any defensive player of the year votes at all, because you could argue he's the best perimeter defender in the league, and that's something to be celebrated. Just the whole team, Naz Reid, defense, like not Carlton Towns. Well, Carlton Towns a little bit, but like he's getting better. But Kyle Anderson, defense. Mike Conley, defense. So you have all these defensive guys, and offensively they are organized in a way where they know Anthony Edwards is the first option, Carlton Towns is the second option, and then the rest of you just fill in where you fill in. So seeing that organization, seeing that camaraderie, seeing that continuity from the Timberwolves, that's very impressive. But on the other side, the Denver Nuggets need to be the champions, man. They need to show up, and they need to
Game two is a disgrace.
Yeah, that's really a disgrace. You have Jamal Murray like throwing things on the court for whatever reason. Like, you should never do that. You Malone's never want to like have out players there,
getting in the ref's face.
Yeah, like and also with that too, like you have the referee in that case, Mark Davis, has some blame as well, because he should never be, as a ref, you never want to be emotional like that. And because you're just basically you're escalating the situation. Your whole goal as a referee is to de-escalate, and in that case, you're escalating the situation. You have, like, it should never be where a coach and a referee are yelling at each other, unless it's like an April Fool's joke, like the Mark Cuban thing that happened like a decade or two ago. So overall, I think that the Nuggets need to show us why they're champs. But I think the biggest thing is that we're seeing how much the lack of a bench is hurting them. They just don't have anybody coming off that bench where they can be like, okay, I trust this guy to be able to at least keep it close, keep it competitive for us for while our starters rest. And I think that's the biggest issue. I think that when you're looking at Peyton Watson, when you're looking at Christian Brown, these are two players that we expected to make the next step. Peyton Watson, I believe, is a rookie. Is he a rookie? Or second he's either year. A rookie or a second-year player, yeah. And then Christian Brown is also a second-year player. These are two players that we expected them to make the next step, but they might
They're not even playing Watson right now in this series.
Yeah, so, and their backup center is DeAndre Jordan. So they need to refuel on the bench. And I think that's really being exposed more than anything else. I mean, Jokic has to play better. Michael Porter Jr. has to play better.
ACP's been horrible.
Yeah, like KCP hasn't been the greatest. Aaron Gordon has been playing well. He's shown up. But Jamal Murray with that calf as well. Like that's the issue with like having such a top heavy team. You don't, when one player is down or when one link in the chain is broken or even weakened, it kind of weakens the whole chain. It kind of weakens the whole team. And that's what we're seeing from Jamal Murray, especially when he is, in terms of scoring option, the number one scoring option on the team.
This is a depth game. Wendo keeps saying it. Deepest team might win this year.
So that being said, I think that the Nuggets, I don't think that we can write off the Nuggets. They are champions for a reason. But I do think they need to realize that they're playing the Minnesota Timberwolves in the second round and not the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, and to your point, the injuries, the depth, and just the situation the series is in, you know, you're not ruling out the Nuggets. You're not saying they have no chance. But they're in a bad spot right now. And it take, I think, some of the Timberwolves' own doing to make them lose the series at this point. And that's just such a massive thing right now. So if Denver goes down, obviously Minnesota's the biggest beneficiary here. They're going to move on to the West Finals.
1,000%.
But who across the league that's left would be the biggest beneficiary of it? Is it Boston? Just because of how bad that Denver matchup was for them? Could that Dallas OKC side, I don't think anyone was looking at either of those teams as finals teams coming into the playoffs, but suddenly they have a path to the finals at that point, the winner of that series. And of course, OKC won game one of that series pretty handily. I saw OKC, you know, a couple of times against the Celtics this year, and I wasn't going to pick them to go all the way, but based on what you see from them, the defense, the star who can be the best player in any series, some of the depth contributions. I mean, Jalen Williams is such a great option there. The second option one.
J-Dub.
Yes.
You can't say Jalen Williams. You have to say J-Dub or J-Will.
Yes. I'm very impressed by J-Will.
You mean J-Dub?
Yeah.
J-Will has been playing well too. But
no, yeah, I'm not knocking him. But yeah, they have what it takes to make the finals. There's no doubt there. I'd probably pick Minnesota over them. Mm-hmm. But who do you think is the biggest beneficiary? Are you thinking Dallas could maybe still make a run here?
I think it has to be OKC, honestly. I mean, let me not say it like that. I think it's all three teams in the West, if Denver goes down, benefit. Because Denver is the team with the most experience by far. And then at that point, you're just looking at a team who is in the same position as you in terms of this is their first time getting as far into the playoffs. So when that happens, you are able to kind of, or you don't really have to deal with the lack of experience. Like my whole issue with the Thunder, all season has been they're a great team, they're too young. But that completely goes out the window if Denver is eliminated. You can make the same argument. Well, not young necessarily, but you can kind of make a similar argument for the Timberwolves. Just again, like the championship medal that the Nuggets have, especially if Rudy Gobert is able to stay on the floor. That would be interesting to see with Chet Holmgren versus Rudy Gobert if he's able to play Rudy Gobert off the court.
And Chet keeps rising to the occasion. Everyone keeps saying, oh, he can't guard this guy, he can't guard that guy, and he's got 3 blocks a game every time you look up.
Yeah, he's if it wasn't for Wemby, like he'd probably win a defensive player of the year in his lifetime. But even like the Mavericks, the Mavericks might be the least likely out of the three just because of how their bigs play. Gafford is
a little banged up.
Yeah. So, and then you have Luka banged up, as you said, as well. And they have bigs that don't really shoot it well. They're just like primarily paint beasts. And that's what Rudy Gobert thrives on in terms of defensively. So out of the three, I would definitely say that the Mavericks are probably the least favored. And I would think it would be a toss up between the Thunder and the Timberwolves.
Yeah. And I don't want to get too far ahead of things there. You start dreaming. I'm dreaming of Celtics Knicks. Certainly. I'm dreaming of Minnesota being in the finals, man. They obviously Edwards is electric. He's a guy that can just take over the league, and he'd be in an interesting position as a guy who's 22, who's this far ahead of his time, who looks ready for this moment. He's going to slip up at some point. He's going to have to bounce back from some struggles, I'm sure. And it might happen in this series. We're not going to sit here again like we did 2 weeks ago and call every series a sweep. These things, even Dallas, I think, is probably going to push that series 6-7 games by the end of it. But man, what an accomplishment to go out there and take those two first games of that series the way they did, man. And they're fun. Yeah. You got to admit, yeah. Nate.
Anthony Edwards is great for the league because he is probably the most true superstar that in terms of the young guys that we have. He's hilarious off the court, on the court, he's electric. And I think that
playing through injury.
Yeah, I think that when we're talking about superstar, it's not just about your performance on the court, because if that's the case, then there are a lot of superstars in the league. But a superstar is that's supposed to be an elite club. You have to have the off the court as well. And I think Anthony Edwards has that. So we might be seeing the making of a true superstar. Even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's great on the court. Off the court, I don't really see too much about him besides a few commercials. Jason Tatum, we see commercials all the time. I believe he posted the tie the shoe video.
Yeah,
I think that's hilarious. That's close to being a superstar as well. Jalen Brunson with the podcast and everything like that, that's superstar-esque. But in terms of just pure, you want to consume their content no matter what, whether they're on the court or off the court, it's Anthony Edwards, and it's not even close.
What makes him different?
He's hilarious.
He'll speak his mind.
Every single time he speaks, it's something that's either hilarious or just thought-provoking or whatever. It's just he's honest, he's down to earth, but at the same time he doesn't take himself too seriously. He can have a laugh, and I appreciate that.
There's a lot to learn there too. I mean, Minnesota was not in a great place, but you come out and make a big draft pick like that, you nail a draft pick. It's all about drafting can just change your team, and they made the right pick there, certainly. And it wasn't a very tough pick. I think he was pretty consensus number one, but they've rolled with him, and he's become the face of that team, and that's changed things there. And, I'm excited for Towns, too, who I like, but I'm just – it's a strong word, but sometimes I'm just, disgusted by his play. He has so much talent. He was that guy coming into the league. I'm looking at his game log right now through the playoffs. 4 fouls, 4, 4, 5, 5, 4 in that game, too. Why is he the only guy who does this?
Because he thinks he's stronger than he is. A lot of those fouls are offensive fouls where he tries to
doing one of these.
Yeah, and he also does the chicken wing a little bit too much, and it's a clear offensive foul, and it's it's so obvious. That's not you're obviously you're in the NBA, you're strong, but you're telling me it's Remember, it's like that picture of him trying to back down DeMarcus Cousins, and DeMarcus Cousins just looking at him like, you're not that strong.
Two DeMarcus Cousins mentions tonight.
Hey, man, DeMarcus Cousins is like one of my favorite big men of all time, honestly. Like, I love watching him play. I remember.
You gotta give Towns a three-point shooting thing, though. 54%.
Oh, yeah. No. He's a great shooter. 1,000% he's a great shooter. But he should probably try to be more elusive in the paint instead of like a straight-up like power big, because he's not a power big.
He used to be, but yeah, that's definitely faded from his game, which is part of my annoyance too, but that's the league, and I get it. They've done it creatively here, where they put the rim protector with the shooter and the guy who wasn't as strong of a rim protector on a perimeter player, and they built the best defense in the league off that. And shout out to Finch, who's done a fantastic job. That would be a very competitive final, Celtics Timberwolves, and it's obviously my favorite choice right now.
Before we get off of that, off the Timberwolves, whoever in the draft process was like, man, I don't know if Anthony Edwards loves basketball. Stupid.
Yeah, you always get stuff like that, though. And some guys who get hyped up to the moon, James Wiseman, fall completely flat. Let's talk a little East. Man, the East is boring, though, huh?
Nah, Heat. I like watching Knicks Pacers. That's interesting to me.
It's fun. Yeah, and I think that series will go pretty long, especially Mitchell Robinson's down now. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
The Pacers had game one in the bag. Some bad calls there. I think the Knicks went and took it, and the Pacers didn't complain too much, which I think is a good sign for them. But they did get screwed a little bit. I thought the offensive foul call was an offensive foul. But the kickball was clearly wrong, and it was a bad one. You can't replay that. So that was tough. And, you know, the Pacers are going to bounce back. I think they're a little thin right now. Their midseason moves, I think, put them in a worse position. And Haliburton was horrible in game one. They're playing as we record this. I don't want to talk too much about that series specifically. Mm-hmm. But is there a path, a straight path right now, for the Celtics to make the finals? Do you think they're going to see too much resistance on the way there? They look pretty head and shoulders above the Cavs.
The issue is, it doesn't appear that the Celtics, hypothetically, I believe the Knicks are going to win that series. And if the Knicks win that series, between Jared Allen being out and Mitchell Robinson being out, it doesn't seem like they're going to face a real rim protector. And if that's the case, Bam? Then yes. Well, Bam isn't necessarily, Bam has been more, I wouldn't consider him the same type of rim protector.
He's not tall, but he's an imposing center.
He is, but he's more of a Draymond Green type. Like, he can protect the rim when he needs to, but I view him more as a, like, that's the guy we need to shut down. Bam, get him type of player.
Help defender. Yeah, so they haven't been tested. I think that's certainly an interesting argument here. And Porzingis is down. Looks like he's going to come back sooner rather than later, which is huge, but they're 2-0 without him. And you know, you haven't been tested in a big way here. I think the Knicks are a test, and they're a physical team, and they've played the Celtics well in the past. It'd be such a fun series. I hope we're not robbed of it for some reason or another here. The two fan bases, the environments, I think that could be a legit 6-7 games. And Brunson plays a style that could hurt the Celtics by taking that in-between space that he does. So they're going to have a challenge with him. But the Celtics are sometimes willing to let those guys beat them and shut everybody else out. So I like the Celtics in that series, too. This is, as I like to say, Nate, a golden opportunity. You have this team. You have this path right now. Giannis is out. Curry's out. LeBron's out. All these stars. Durant. Some of the best teams in the East. I didn't respect the Bucks, but the Bucks could keep up with the Celtics a little better scoring-wise than some of these teams. They're gone. The Celtics should be a slam dunk to make the finals here.
Yeah. I mean, my only thing is I'm always concerned about the teams who coast through the regular season, because, and it may be possible that the Celtics win this championship and they don't face any adversity, but what happens when they do?
They're going to in the finals.
That's my big question. Because we've seen teams that have been great that face adversity, and they just fall apart completely. And they look like world beaters at a point in time. And like someone punches them in the mouth back, and then they're just crying home to their mom, and they never leave their house again. So That's what really what I'm looking to see. When are the Celtics going to face some real adversity?
The Knicks will show them some physicality, as these other teams have. But
I think it would have been more if Mitchell Robinson would have been able to play.
Right. And like I think even
for the playoffs,
I think even Randall could have helped them in that series. Yeah, you need all hands on deck against the Celtics. The finals is where it's going to get interesting. And I think the biggest question left in the playoffs, because obviously with the Nuggets down 0-2, the Celtics are the favorites here. They've allowed extra physicality. They've changed the way these games are called. They're letting a team like Minnesota specifically muck up the game, play with added physicality. They're not calling as many fouls. Can that be something that swings a series against the Celtics, especially when you have the best defense in the NBA? I think that's going to be the deciding factor in whether or not the Celtics win the finals, because the Celtics are a good defense. They're second right behind Minnesota, but they're kind of like let you shoot the bad shots and we're going to win out the math game kind of defense. The Minnesota is going to bring it to you, and they have the wing defenders. Like you said, they have the size inside, the rim protector, all of that. If they're able to utilize that along with their physicality and taking Tatum out of the series, and Tatum's had a rough playoff so far shooting the ball, that's where it could get to be that adversity you're talking about, Nate. And that's what I'm looking at. Like, is Minnesota going to be able to play that kind of hacking style the whole way? And that was a big part of game two against Denver. They just laid the physicality on them, and the refs are allowing it. And so the Celtics are going to have to adapt to that a little bit here. And, you know, they've played well. They're not seeing a ton of resistance on the other side, but they're handling business right now. And their biggest benefit might just be, we played five games round one, played five games round two, maybe four, get that extra rest, stay healthy. And, you know, you're the freshest team through the whole playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be very annoyed if in any of these series, the refs decide, oh, we're being too, they're being too physical. Let's stop that. It's playoff basketball. It's supposed to be physical. And we also need the refereeing calling the game to be consistent. And you have established as a league that these playoffs are going to be physical. So so if they do end up like just like having a change of heart midway through the playoffs, I'm going to be very annoyed at that.
I don't think we'll see that, fortunately. So teams got to adapt. And Mazzulla said the other night he doesn't love it, but we got to adapt. So I think that's kind of telling right there. We are brought to you by the Game Time app. You want to get in the Celtics Cavs on Thursday? This is your app. Go download it. Tickets right up into and after game time. Best deals right up until that point. And, you know, people want to get rid of their tickets right around game time, and they'll, you know, reduce those prices. So check out their offers there. Create an account and use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Of course, terms apply. Check out the Game Time app. But it's not just sports. It's concerts, events, anything you can think of. It's over at Game Time. So go download the app. Use that code CLNS for a discount on your first purchase. Again, terms apply. All right, let's do it, Nate. This is getting just out of this world. And I have a lot of thoughts. We could probably talk for like 10 hours about it, but I just want to debrief a little bit. When we talked about it at the beginning, probably like a month ago or so, with like that and, you know, Drake's first responses there. Impressed by those responses. I thought it was a good battle. Like we talked about, Kendrick said it was going to be like a friendly feud. And then it went to a dark place pretty fast. You know, Drake with the accusations about Kendrick, Kendrick with the accusations and many of them about Drake. And now I don't know what happened, but there's reports of a shooting at Drake's house, as well as I don't know, was the someone trying to break in or whatever happened today real?
I didn't see that report.
There was a report out there. I don't know if it was real or not, but someone else was trying to, I guess, pull up on the house. That everyone knows where Drake lives. That's probably not great for him.
You think?
So my first thought, and I have a lot of them, and we'll just kind of like introduce this. This has been amazing and way better than I think anyone could have imagined. It feels like we're living like in a historic moment here with these two artists going at it. I think Drake has performed miles better than I ever could have imagined and made it close early on. And now we're in a place, and this is my second thought, where unbelievably, and I was at practice today, they're playing Not Like Us, Jalen and Drew Holiday are dancing to it. Everybody's loving the song. It's going to be one of the songs of the summer. And people are legitimately dancing on Drake's career grave. And we can have the debate of whether this could actually end that pedestal Drake was standing on, which has been lasting a decade plus now and just seemed unbreakable. But I've said it a million times, no one is standing by Drake. And now that Kendrick has done what he's done at the end of this feud, everybody is just dancing to this diss track that is just tearing Drake apart, stealing all of his credibility. And at its core, and I know, you know, Bomani made a great point with this. I was listening to his podcast. Kendrick is trying to just eliminate him from the rap game and say, if you side with him, you're approving of all this stuff. And he said a lot about Drake, some of it real, some of it seems fabricated. So I don't know. Where do you stand on this? What, like, where do you go first when you want to talk about everything that's happened here?
I think it's so many layers to it. First of all, let me just say,
that's why I'm saying, where, like, where's your mind go first?
Man, I don't even know. I don't even know. I think
we have like a 24 hour documentary worth of stuff that's happened here. It's so crazy.
We do. I think, first of all, Kendrick Lamar is real. Hip hop fans have never thought that Drake is a better rapper than Kendrick. Never. The only person whose opinion that I value who has said that is Lupe Fiasco. And I think it's because Lupe Fiasco wants to beat Kendrick in a rap battle. And I think that he's trying to poke at the bear so Kendrick responds to him. And then Lupe, who might be one of the few people on the planet, can obliterate Kendrick Lamar. Not even obliterate. I'm not even say obliterate. Can beat Kendrick Lamar. But besides that, I don't think when you talk about the reference tracks, when you talk about the ghostwriters, when you talk about the fact that for years people have been pointing out that Drake goes to certain places to steal sounds and use those sounds, and then he's basically, for a lack of a better term, LeBron. Like, he comes to your team, everything's great. Like you, and then when he leaves, you have nothing. Like, he takes everything with him. There isn't really much appreciation. I think we're also seeing how phony Drake's appreciation of the culture that has given him all this wealth and all this power is.
The fact that he's using not like us, right?
Yeah, the fact that he's using AI generated voices of Tupac and Snoop Dogg, I think that's embarrassing, especially since he led the charge on, rightfully so, led the charge on coming down on AI voices being used.
Yeah, I think that's completely Drake weekend song, right?
Yeah, he's completely hypocritical in that circumstance. I think
I do love Taylor's right, Kendrick. We need ya.
Yeah, like it's funny, but it's
a funny
dangerous
song, but
it's
I
very
didn't like
dangerous. Yeah, it's very dangerous. You can't, as Drake, you can't diss people or sneak diss people for years and think it's going to fly. Especially someone like Kendrick Lamar, who we've seen make 4 classic albums. Some people are now arguing 5 with Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. The level of depth that all the music that Kendrick Lamar has, and that's the man you decided to sneak this and poke at time and time again. Drake's music is good. Drake's music is fun. Does Drake's music give me something to think about after I turn it off? No. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with just putting on music because it sounds great. That's Drake's whole career. But there's a problem with doing that and still believing that you're the most hip hop out of everybody. I think that what Kendrick is aiming for is a cultural reset of hip hop. Over the years, we've seen hip hop become more and more mainstream, more and more pop. And in that, it has lost the essence of what the original creators of hip hop wanted for the genre in terms of speaking on issues that everyday people are experiencing, speaking on issues that everyday Black Americans are experiencing. That's something that was very valuable about the culture, the fact that Black Americans can use their own voices to talk about their struggles in a way that was authentically them. I think that that has been perverted over the years, because when money comes into the picture, things tend to be perverted when money comes into the picture, co-opted, probably the better word, when money comes into the picture. And we've seen that with hip hop. I think Kendrick is going for a cultural reset. I don't think Kendrick cares if he can't come back from this beef. It doesn't seem like he can't. He's in a position where like his career is going to be over by any stretch of the imagination. But hypothetically, if it was that, I don't think Kendrick cares, because I think Kendrick is trying to reset hip hop to the values that it was founded on.
No, which it seems like he wants Drake's career severely damaged.
Yeah.
And by going to the pedophile lines and comparing him to Harvey Weinstein. And I think the biggest thing in particular is saying like, LeBron, you better not bring, you know, your family near him. Curry, you better not associate with him. And I think he's isolated Drake in a way. And this is the biggest takeaway I have so far. No one wants to stand by Drake. SZA was like, leave me out of this. Haven't heard from Sexy Red, who I think is one of his like biggest partners. J. Cole dove off the boat to avoid the conflict and swam away. I mean, he has no allies right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, SZA was never going to be like Drake's ally in the first place.
I'm just saying, like, these are people who associated with themselves heavily with him in the past.
Well, you got to understand that the reason why you associate yourself with Drake isn't because you like Drake. It's because he can potentially put your career on a different level than it
Where's
once
Nicki
was.
Minaj?
Beefing with Megan Thee Stallion and calling her Bigfoot. And distastefully, I might add. But I think with that, I just think that just like the J. Cole part of it, J. Cole kind of, again, like it's everything that I thought it was going to be, at least from the J. Cole perspective, in terms of J. Cole thinking it was going to be like a friendly rap battle. Okay, who raps the best? Ha 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 ha. Oh, I'm better than you. Ha ha ha. And then it turns out to be personal. And the Sexy Red of it all, like Sexy Red has already said that she doesn't really care about rap. She just cares more about the money. So that makes sense. Kendrick broke it down on Not Like Us. The analogy of Kendrick calling Drake a colonizer, because every time he needs that spark in his career, he goes to Atlanta to colonize it. The same way that over the course of history, we've seen white people colonize, you name it. Whenever they've wanted to, I think that comparison is telling. I think that we see someone, when I think about it, I kind of think of Drake in the same boat as Doja Cat now, in terms of they were never willing to fully embrace their Blackness unless there's a check that comes with it. And that within itself is problematic. Because you're not trying to actually understand the origins, the struggles that hip hop, that Black Americans go through every day. And I think that's a huge part of everything, because hip hop is supposed to be a conscious genre, or like there's going to be fun. Like, of course, it's going to be fun. But for the most part, the primary function is for it to be a conscious genre. I think that when you have Kendrick going on these nuclear on Drake, I think it's because if you have the elimination of Drake, you have the elimination in a sense of the pop culture aspect of hip hop. And that once again resets hip hop to being the conscious genre, the genre that calls things out instead of the genre that just allows everything to fly. And we've seen how that leads us. We're hip hop was the biggest genre of in the world, of music in the world, or at least in America. And it's kind of on the decline. I can't really name any rappers who are new, up and coming, that have particularly got my eye. And that's because a lot of the substance in hip hop is gone. Could it be brought back? 1000%. But it's just an overall tie into everything that's going on in the world today of just like how everything is just made to distract people from what's going on. And Drake is a big part of that. And not saying that Kendrick with like, or any other rapper is innocent with that. There are a lot of rappers who are guilty of that. But the main target or the main culprit of that is Drake, because he never has any commentary in his music. It's like, that's the reason why he really, if you want to argue it, Take Care is really his only classic. But I can't say that he has other classics the same way that we say that Kendrick has 4, borderline 5. The same way that we say that J. Cole might have 2. It's a battle of real hip hop and commercial hip hop. Kendrick representing real hip hop. I think that Kendrick making a song like Not Like Us, breaking it down the way he does, the way that Drake uses Atlanta, is very important. I think that Kendrick doing that on a beat where it's clear this is where he's from, Kendrick being a West Coast rapper, using a West Coast beat to show I'm from this, what can you do that you're from? There's no signature sound that Drake can go to and say, this is where I'm from, and diss Kendrick on that, or say like, I'm here. There's nothing he can do. He can't try to sound like Atlanta because he's not from Atlanta. He did the UK thing on Family Matters. I thought that was garbage, by the way. He tries to co-opt the Heart Part 6, which is like basically him trying to defend allegations. Nothing really against Kendrick in
and
that
him trying to sneak out of the beef.
Yeah, and him trying to sneak out the beef. It's just corny on Drake's side, like all across the board. Drake having these lines about you're rapping like you're trying to free the slaves. Yeah, it's hip hop. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do.
Probably the worst look.
Him calling Rick Ross racist. You can't do that. That doesn't make any sense.
I keep laughing
at Rick
Ross.
Get a cease and desist in a rap beef. You can't do that. These are all violations of what hip hop is supposed to be in terms of when you're talking about beefing. All violations. And if someone else did it to him, he would call it out. But because he doesn't have the self-awareness to realize I'm straying away from what I'm supposed to be or the character that I'm supposed to portray, he's going down in flames. The last point I'll say before I give it back to you, I feel like it's just on top of it all, I just feel like it's clear that the better music is being made by Kendrick. I think that within this, we're seeing every side of Kendrick Lamar. We're seeing the aggressive side on Euphoria. We're seeing the, in my opinion, the To Pimp a Butterfly side of Kendrick on 616. Or Taylor actually compared it to Control, which is very interesting. I've listened to Euphoria, Meet the Grahams, and Not Like Us, and I'm not kidding when I say this, probably 50 times, mainly because they're on Spotify. 616 isn't on Spotify, and I haven't really been able to listen to that one as much. But to continue along, then you have Meet the Grahams, where we're seeing the storytelling that Kendrick is able to put together with these 5 letters or 4 letters that he's directing at different people in Drake's camp.
A menacing, insane track.
Yes. And then finally we have Not Like Us, which is just a West Coast banger. You could already write it down. It's the song of the summer. It doesn't matter what else comes out. It's the song of the summer. And I don't care what else comes out.
That's what slams the door on the
And
beat.
Within that, I think it's ironic that the way that Drake beat Meek Mill is by just making an undeniable, catchy track. And that's the way that he's losing this, because Kendrick has made an undeniable, catchy track. But within that, it also has a so much depth to it, to the point where it's an iceberg. Each track is an iceberg. You're getting the fun, but you're also getting the conscious content that you're looking for from a hip hop that a traditionalist is looking for. I don't think that there's anything that I can point to directly and say in terms of how this has been handled that Kendrick has messed up in any point that this has been handled. I see that most of these mistakes that we're seeing is coming from Drake's side because he's just completely misjudging or misreading the room. Again, like the line about like you're rapping like you're trying to free the slaves. Like that's stupid as fuck. He's just continuously misplaying the room. And because of that, we're seeing where the disconnect is between Drake and hip hop culture.
Yeah. And there's still some stuff here that, you know, I think hurts Kendrick a little bit. And again, like he's just performed so masterfully. He's been, I think, the smarter, more decisive, actor in this. You know, I think those two songs coming out and erasing Family Matters. I think that was just perfect, and where this really took a turn because Drake was putting some pressure on him. You know, Push Ups was a great track, way more than I thought he was capable of, and then you pile on a little bit with the Taylor Made there, which I didn't like.
Wait, actually, can I pause? Can I pause you right there? The fact that he made Push Ups with that trash ass beat, first of all, and then he switched the beat. That's not on Twitter without it being official. That's not a W in my book. Honestly, it's not. Like I can't say that that's a great track because
his performance was there, and the lines.
It doesn't matter. That beat was trash. It doesn't matter. That first beat was trash. You can't put out the track, get the feedback, and then like this is not a snippet battle. This is a rap beef. Whatever you put out has to be final. Right. And it wasn't final. I can't give him the credit for that. I just can't. The bars in terms of Metro make your own beats, which by the way, Metro did, BBL Drizzy, hilarious. Like the bars on that, solid. Good.
I can't believe but among the many L's Drake took that Metro actually did get him back for that.
Yeah.
I mean, the L's are just piling on Drake. It's unreal. I mean, I just never thought I'd see him in this position. And he has certainly made numerous mistakes here. But back to my point, this is the question I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Did Kendrick, because he obviously, he was trying to eliminate Drake from relevancy here by any means necessary. And you said a lot of stuff there, and he said a lot of stuff in the lines that I think could have done that on their own. But going nuclear, let's just say the daughter thing is not real. Let's just say the pedophile thing is extremely exaggerated. And again, Drake put himself in that position by some of the spots he's put himself in over the years and some of the things he's done. But just based on the content of these songs here, does seem a little exaggerated at the very least. I don't think he's going to be holed up with Weinstein or have the place raided for, you know, sex ring or whatever the allegation was there. In turn, Drake made some pretty staggering allegations against Kendrick too that really haven't, you know, come to light either here with the domestic violence stuff. But specifically on Kendrick, since we're saying he handled this perfectly here and has just been great throughout this, did he go too far by going nuclear with some of the content later in this? Because he is one who said it was going to be a friendly feud.
It's not Kendrick's fault that he went nuclear. It's Drake's fault. Drake is the first one to bring up families. Drake is the first one.
Family matters.
Drake is the first one to bring up families. Drake is the first one to bring up like allegations, or whatever. It's all Drake's fault. It's the same thing as when Drake brought up Pusha T's wife, and then Pusha T brought out that he had a kid. That's Drake's fault. If you didn't want it to go that way, you don't do it first. If someone else does, like you can't do it first and then claim you're the victim. You did it first. It's self-defense at that point.
So where we are with the defense track, which he was in a tough spot defending some of the stuff that Kendrick was saying, but it was really like horrible defenses. And he throws back the stuff about Dave Free. Essentially at the end of the track is like, yeah, you know, I'm done. This was fun. It's great to get you out here working. And, you know, I'll actually give him credit for that. It was amazing that Drake was able to get Kendrick producing the level and the amount of songs and bars and you know, the inspiration to go this hard. Like, Drake provided that, and so I'll give him a little bit of credit for that, as he wanted here on this track. But this last part we're stuck on here, the heart part six, really was a disgrace. And you know, I think you said it, the short-sightedness of Drake's work. No one's going to go back and listen to the heart part six and be like, yeah, this stands the test of time. In fact, it could expire within a week or two here, just based on how short-sighted everything here is.
Some people are already calling it heart failure.
I just don't, and you know, Kendrick hasn't responded to Drake's allegations. I felt like Drake could have just left the allegations Kendrick made there and act like he was above it. He addressed it, and he didn't address it great here. And this is where we stand. What's next? Will there be more? It feels like this is coming to an end here. And, you know, what's the most likely result of this? Kendrick is going to go down. He already was in the mix for the greatest ever. This is some accomplishment, what he's been able to do here. And he's got a hit out of it, probably his biggest hit since Humble. He's got momentum going into his album, certainly here. You know, I think he made a real statement, like you said, about the state of hip hop. So it's been incredible what he's accomplished here. I don't know where Drake goes from here. It's going to be very interesting. Like, if he truly takes a hit, and you know, if you embarrass yourself on this stage, we've seen it with Chance, we've seen it with some other guys who had really good positions and did some embarrassing stuff or really bad music and fell off their perch. Drake had the highest perch you can imagine. It felt like he could do no wrong. We've heard him put out bad tracks. We've heard him put out bad albums. We've heard people roll their eyes at him. And he's certainly never been the greatest rapper, which, you know, it's no surprise to me that one of the greatest ever and a guy that I would rank in like maybe the 50s all time in terms of skill lost this the way he did. So I'll give Drake some credit for competing, putting himself out here. But my final thought, Nate, it's funny that it starts with Kendrick saying it's not a big three, it's just me. And Cole drops out and says, I'm not doing this. And Drake loses the way he did here. It really is just Kendrick at the end of this. Like, you see that it wasn't a big three. It was just him.
My new top four is Kendrick, Future, J. Cole, Drake. That is my new top four.
You're keeping Cole in there?
Yeah. I mean, again, Cole, like, I don't.
It was embarrassing.
Cole is not like, that's the most mature thing you can do. That's literally the most mature thing you can do. You see, you go somewhere and you realize it's not your vibe and you just leave. Everybody has done that. If you're
mature, the competitive spirit, you can't back out. But
there's a difference
and say,
between,
I'm one of the best.
There's a difference between competitiveness and hatred. Cole is not on. Cole doesn't. It doesn't appear that Cole has a hating bone in his body. He's just not. He's not like that. I'm sure if it was a friendly competition, like just strictly for the competition, J. Cole would be dropping tracks too. I am certain of that. But the fact that Schoolboy Q is warning, reportedly, Schoolboy Q is warning J. Cole, nah, bruh, it's not what you think it is. It's not as friendly as what you think it is. And J. Cole hears it and he's like, oh, I thought we just wanted to do friendly competition. We're not doing friendly competition. I'm gonna leave. Call me back when we are going to do friendly competition. I'll gladly participate when we do that. I think that's mature. That's maturity. I don't see why people are like, I guess like you're trying to knock it because like the spirit of hip hop, like, oh, we have to, like, you don't take anything back at all. But like the most mature thing you can do as a man is admit when you're wrong, admit when something is not for you. And that's what J. Cole did. That's the most adult thing that we can expect out of anybody. I really don't understand it.
Yeah, I just don't think you gain from it. You certainly don't lose.
But every day, actually, it started off with him losing. Every single day, he lost a little less. Every single day that this has gone on, he's lost a little less. And we might get to a point where, as the days start going, J. Cole starts to win some. Just by staying out. Just by understanding that this was not his crowd. This is not his game. And I think there's power in that. I think there's power in having the self-awareness to know this is not for me. And I think that that's something that a lot of people in general could do more.
Well, there's going to be plenty more that falls out of this. I'm interested to see who stands by Drake, how much he loses out of this. And, you know, I give him credit for competing here and trying. But, man, did he lose. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. Kendrick, we'll see where he carries this on to. It feels like it's over. Maybe there'll be more. And we'll talk about it if it happens. But good to debrief here and some really, really good stuff. I think we're all just appreciative we got to live this. This was special moment. I know you covering hip hop over at the Cap, Nate.
Yeah, this is the most.
There hadn't been a lot of invigorating stuff coming out.
Yeah,
there wasn't a lot of stuff that excited you in hip hop, and this became an all time moment on a dime.
And it's all because of Future and Metro Boomin. It is. I'm sorry. It is. We don't trust you as a classic album because of this. It is. Sorry, I said it first.
Yeah, three funniest moments of this. BBO Drizzy.
Yep.
Rick Ross's random diss. Sticking that in the middle of this. And then his plane crashing and blaming it on Drake. All right. It's been fun. We got game 2 Cavs Celtics post game coverage coming your way on the Garn Report, so stay tuned for that. And then we're off to Cleveland this weekend. So we'll be back here on Dome Theory sometime next week. Second round series will be close to a wrap by that point. We'll see where they go. Thanks for stopping by, Nate. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, all the rest. And check out our great sponsors, Prize Picks and Game Time. I'm Bobby Mann. This has been Dome Theory. We will talk to you soon.